Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
This week's episode of Zero Block 30 is brought to you by the good folks at Dude Products, who are the world's leading men's wipe. I'm in New York City right now, away from home. Every time I get off a flight, the first thing I do is when I get to the bathroom after I go number two, I also take out a Dude shower wipe and wipe off my whole body because I hate the stink of an airplane. Like, I'm a dirty dude in general, don't really care about it. But with Dude wipes, I know I have those shower wipe. I can clean off my face, my balls, whatever, after a long flight. And then, because I'm in New York, these motherfuckers here don't even have bathtubs. And I hate taking regular showers. So 90% of the time, I take like one shower a week. The rest of it's Dude wipes. I basically act like New York City is Fallujah, and I just use nothing but wipes while I'm here. But nobody's none the wiser because I clean my armpits, I clean my balls, and then I use my face to clean up the rest of it by using Dude products. You can do the same things where Dude products gives 15% off with the promo code Barstool to Stoolies every single day. You get free shipping. You can also pick them up at Walgreens. Dude products gets you some so you don't have to take a shower while you're in New York. Let's go. And we're dropping bombs.
Yeah, we're dropping bombs. We sent his ass a sick call, though.
Yeah. And dropping bombs, I guess we should really be more. We're dropping more bombs and big bombs because that's one thing that I hate about the pervasive idea of the Obama administration is like that he was scared of conflict. The dude dropped 26,000 bombs last year.
I got to tell you, I didn't know that number till I saw you tweet it. I mean, I knew he was dropping bombs throughout his time in office. I didn't realize that number was that big in 2016. Though.
I feel like you can say that Obama was not good on this or that or that, but saying that he was scared to use military, he not only dropped that many bombs, he did it in seven different countries.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like we were scared to get involved with it. We dropped him in Pakistan. We dropped him in Afghanistan. We dropped him in Somalia, we dropped them in Syria, we dropped them in Libya, we dropped them in Iraq. We're dropping bombs.
We were dropping bombs, but you know what? When it's not as prevalent in the news, people just assume it's not happening.
Yeah, and I thought it was prevalent, like that, not to the point where they're doing 24,000, because you're talking, that's multiple reports a day,
exactly.
And a lot of those
that's
are going to be,
yeah.
A lot of those are going to be bomb runs where you're just unleashing hell, like in, out of a C-130 as well.
Agreed. No,
but this is definitely different.
Yeah.
What happened yesterday was definitely different.
It was unprecedented, to say the least.
Yeah, it was. First time that bomb had been used with that payload. It's a pretty big deal. We'll get into more of that with our guest on today's show, who is Jason Kander. Jason Kander is a former Army officer who was an intelligence bubba, and now he was Secretary of State for Missouri, and he ran for Senate last year. You might remember him from putting together the weapon blindfolded. We'll get into more of that later on in the show.
Yeah, and you know what I think was important that we said when we spoke to him was that we all agreed we're going to reserve the right to stay whether or not this was a good thing or a bad thing. Because too quick, I think people are jumping on Twitter and like, uh-oh, here comes World War III. And I don't think that's the right reaction.
And that being said, if any of you motherfuckers listen to it at 4 o'clock during high whiskey hour on a Friday, do not come into my mentions on Twitter and be like, you guys were actually wrong. We recorded it on Thursday afternoon, so if we're wrong, you can't. I already say it right now. Any feedback doesn't even count. Like, unless you say, really good jobs, chaps and con, then we'll say thank you. Won't retweet it, but we'll say thank you. Going to be a good show. Do we want to do a surprise? I told you that I wanted to have a little bit of lighter element, but we have McAfee on for that.
That's
so that being
good.
Said, we have Pat McAfee on. I was on his show this week, told my full combat story.
Which was great because you've never even actually told that full story in depth on anyone's podcast.
Yeah, well, I was pretty margarita deep, so I feel like that changed the outcome of that. I didn't want to go. I was only supposed to be in there for like 5 minutes, like
yeah,
five,
it was
10 minutes
a lot longer
plugging
than five.
ZBT, and then next thing I know, it's an hour deep, and I'm crying and shit. Like it was a weird moment, but we'll go with it. But that interview is going to be brought to you by DollarShaveClub.com. Buying a razor is like buying a car. To get smooth, luxury quality, you have to pay a huge price. But it's not like that anymore because you can go to DollarShave.com, and they are amazing quality. They've got the shave tech I need to get none of those overpriced gimmicks I never use. I just saw an ad for a razor, Monopoly's newest razor, and they use all kinds of shit. If they have to use, let me just say this. I'm going to break script for a minute, and I know that you guys appreciate that. if they have to use Roger Federer to sell you fucking razors, the razor's probably not that good. Look at the face that they are using for DollarShaveClub.com. They're using my face. I have hair all over my face. And they're using it because they know I've sent them pics. I've sent them text messages of what my testicles look like. And those things are smooth as a baby's bottom, baby. And I shave under my beard because I'm not a savage. I'm not an offensive lineman. I'm not one of these NHL hockey dudes. I'm a guy who likes to have a nice beard, keep it off my high cheekbones, keep it off my neck so I look sexy and I look good. I do that by using DollarShaveClub.com. And if you don't, you're missing out because right now you get your first month for any of their razors for only a buck. That's right, $1, American dollar, who President Trump says is a little too strong right now. I don't even know what that means, but it sounds problematic. And after that, it's just going to be a few bucks a month. So that's going to be even more problematic if you're trying to get it like through backdoor channels in like India or Somalia or something like that. There's no long-term commitments, no hidden fees. You can cancel whenever you want. Get your first month for just a dollar at dollarshaveclub.com/chaps. That's dollarshaveclub.com/chaps.
And shout to Dollar Shave Club for being
Connor Shave.
Progressive.
And Connor Shaved.
Yeah. I'm back on clean shaving for the spring and the summer because guess what? You know what Dollar Shave Club knows? They know that sometimes in the fall and the winter, you want to keep your face warm. So you might let that beard grow out like I did. Mm-hmm. But then you need to jump on back on the shave train.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? You could just pause your membership. I just paused my membership for Dollar Shave Club all winter so that I'm not getting charged. And now that I'm ready to jump back on that shave train, I just reactivate that bitch, and I'm ready.
If you live in New York City or the outskirts of New York City and you don't use something like DollarShaveClub.com, you're a straight-up idiot.
Basically.
Because it costs like $3 for tap water, like in New York.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. So go to DollarShaveClub.com/chaps and get some money off. $1, free shipping, all that shit. Do it.
Gigantic balls, but not nowhere near the amount of courage to be military, so I appreciate the hell
out of it. Let's get into the weeds on that comment for a second.
Yeah.
Everybody always wants to talk about having big balls like it's a good thing. That's a fucking terrible thing.
I can't wear sweatpants.
It's annoying.
Horrible.
I can't wear sweatpants. I got big quads, big balls. It looks like when they were raising the flag.
At Iwo Jima?
Iwo Jima. That's what wearing sweatpants, that's what it looks like. So.
I've actually never heard a package described as the soldiers raising the flag, or excuse me, Marines
Thank
raising
you.
The flag at Iwo Jima. So that's impressive.
Well, it's no disrespect to them. That's just what it looks like if I wear sweatpants. You will never see me wearing sweatpants, ever.
And conversely, on the other side of the coin, I have incredibly small testicles, and I was blessed with them. I could do a crossover, like the little crossover moves. I probably could have been a gymnast.
I Lance Armstronged myself 5 to 6 times during my NFL career kicking by losing a ball. So my quads would pinch together, ball would shoot up inside of me, come off the field, bouncing on the bench, trying to find it again. That's a real – it's not a –
I'm going to go back and watch film now that I know what to look for.
They don't show me on – I was a punter. I'm not on TV.
We got gifts of you. You were on TV.
Yeah.
Doing big
some,
things.
I did some cool shit.
Yeah, you did.
I did some horrible shit, too. Real bad. But anyways, if I had enough courage to sign up for the military, I would hope that much like my job, I would be a specialist of some sort – maybe a sniper.
See, everybody says that.
That's because we're not tough enough to get into the actual... Not that snipers aren't tough, but nobody that signs up for the military would ever say, I'd be on the front lines, because that's why they didn't sign up for the military, because that's not our mindset. I think I would rather be out in the back looking out for the dudes in front of
the
lines.
Oh, well, sniping. So I think that's a misconception about what sniper is, and luckily...
Because snipers are
going
to go out there.
Our guest that's going to be on with you is going to be... Oh, next week. Our guest next week is a sniper, so he can actually tell you what they do. But snipers are usually forward of everyone else.
Clearing the way.
They go out in front to have overwatch while you're going to do it, but they have to move out before you actually get there. And you're there sometimes days in advance, like sitting, waiting, watching.
I don't have the patience for that.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm not.
It sounds like such a sexy job, but it's not. Like, you're in a position where you have to, like, piss yourself, shit yourself. Like, you
and
can't move at all.
The American Sniper movie made me cry, that guy was obviously legend. But I don't know what I would do. I really don't know what I would do. Never really thought of it. I always assumed I'd be a sniper because I wouldn't want to – I couldn't actually be in the actual fight because I'm a big puss. But I guess now that you're saying I'm out in front, I don't think –
Your personality would fit in great with an infantry company.
An infantry – I've said this about a few guys now. But I think it's because we're a lot of like-minded individuals. I could see you being in my artillery platoon. You're just like, you know.
What does that do? What do I do?
We fire big-ass cannons from pretty far away.
Yeah.
But, you know, you need guys who are hard workers, but who can, you know, relax, have a good time, I think you would fit right in.
Were you a big locker room complain guy? Did you complain a lot in the locker room about how shit you guys had to do?
No.
Oh, yeah. Probably not infantry guy then. Infantry guys complain all the time. That's like all they do.
Yeah.
Well, complaining leads to change. Gary Goldman has a joke that the old generation never complained about how horrible the phone was and anything like that, so it never changed. It was not until our generation we were complaining about how terrible the phone and computers were that it changed. So complaints lead to change and progression. So I understand where complaints and complaining comes from, but I'm not a big complainer. I just keep it moving, adapt.
Listen, I'll tell you, there's a reason FA is referred to amongst my circles as football alumni. A lot of football players go into FA, so that's why also I think you would fit in really well, obviously because of your previous profession.
Good. I think that's what I'm doing then. If I was to be in the, I'd be in the artillery.
I would love you in my platoon.
Can't wait.
Yeah. But also because, you know, like I said.
What do we drink?
A lot of beer.
I love beer.
Yeah.
Everybody knows I love beer.
We go out on Fridays and we enjoy some beers.
I'm all about that.
Yeah.
I'm more of a whiskey guy myself. I like a margarita and a full body red too, though.
On my show, you were Marg Deep.
Yeah, I was Marg Deep.
You were Marg Deep.
Yeah.
And it was incredible. I love a good strawberry Marg. I'm not scared to kick back, drink a strawberry Marg, enjoy life, a little toast to the amigos out there. But, I mean, this is a beer is my thing.
If we want to class this up a minute, I mean, the thing with a margarita, what makes a good margarita, get the sugar out. Take the sugar rim off. Take the salt rim off. That's one of the fastest way to a hangover. The salt and the sugar is one of the fastest way.
Yeah.
Remove that. I just go straight. Don't you fucking dare make it with a mix either.
That's what you say?
Yeah, no mixes.
Straight to their face?
Straight to their faces. Hey. I told the dude yesterday, Smith, I was like, I want a margarita. He was like, gotcha. I was like, wait, I'm no longer in Texas. Are you going to make it with a mix? And he was like, I would never do that to you, sir. And
really?
I
it's because that
service.
Beard.
Yeah.
Because that beard and those tats.
Yeah, definitely. Like,
if I ask for it, he's sugaring the shit out of me. Yeah, if I ask for it. That's the vibe that I put off, apparently.
You like sugar?
I love sugar. By the way, I do.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get in shape. It's weird that I've retired and I'm attempting to get in shape now.
Right.
And it's kind of an awkward thing, but sugar is the death of you.
Mm-hmm.
Sugar, carbs, salt.
Well, it's a little harder now, too, because you don't have a nutritionist or a strength.
Never had a nutritionist.
Well, you didn't have one? The Colts didn't have one?
They had one. I didn't use it.
You just didn't.
I didn't
want
to break.
Okay.
I didn't want to fix what wasn't broken.
Okay.
I ate pizza, wings, drank beer, kept it moving, and that's just how I did it. And I was always like, well, if I get extremely fit and I lose weight, am I still going to be able to hit the ball as far if I'm at a lighter weight? Because if you look at all the big hitters in the history of baseball, big motherfuckers.
Big dudes, yeah.
Yeah, and
putting that weight behind it.
Yeah, I was like 235, 240 when I was punting, and I always thought that if I got in shape and got smaller, the ball wouldn't travel as far, so I didn't want to risk it. But my knees got fucked because of that.
You're carrying too much weight.
Yeah, they couldn't handle the girth, the poundage that was just behind every single kick in the force and all that stuff. So now that I'm trying to get in shape, sugar's the death of you, I've heard. Not only for hangovers,
young,
but for everything.
I don't know if it's this way in the Army, but the Marine Corps is fucking terrible about telling you how to diet whenever you're trying to get bigger.
Oh, it's the worst. They have no concept of
nutrition
and health.
Well, they just don't teach you anything.
Yeah,
so
they
don't. See, like, dudes in the gym smashing these sugary protein bars, like, all day long, like the Gatorade ones or that have nothing but
sugar.
Terrible protein and 40 grams of sugar.
It tastes
like
good.
That.
People want to eat them.
They're like,
what
are you eating, dude? Oh, I'm eating my fifth Muscle Milk of the day. Like,
attaboy.
You're not doing yourself any favors.
It's really because the NFL never really worried about nutritionists until these past couple years, too, until it was mandated by the NFLPA that each team has a nutritionist. So that was a part of the new CBA. And it was crazy that the NFL never. You guys used to smoke cigarettes, drink beers the night before games, and all that stuff. Modern NFL is so different now. Like, me eating pizza and wings and drinking beer at places, I was very much an anomaly compared to the modern NFL right now.
Did your teammates give you shit about that? Like, Pat, like, what are you doing?
No.
They don't care as long as you're
and it's crazy.
As long
that
as
ball?
You're good, you just keep it moving. Yeah, as long as you're good, that's all that matters.
That's what's crazy about the NBA. These dudes are, like, freak athletes and eating candy and shit, like, all the time. Like,
yeah, it's crazy. Because Chad Johnson used to talk about eating McDonald's every single day, and he's one of the quickest, has some of the quickest feet in the history of the NFL and stuff like that. But the more science changes, the more people think that they have to change, and the more everything changes. I don't know. One day you'll read that milk's bad for you. One day you'll read it's great for you. You have no idea. It depends on what spin is being put on what research.
This is a consistent thing. I'm Zero Block 30. Fuck science.
Yeah.
Like, because
whatever works for you.
If you believe in that thing.
Yeah.
Science, if you believe in that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, what's Barstool America all about? What is your message?
So it's just Barstool America.
Oh, Barstool America. Excuse me.
Dropped the A. I think because there was a lawsuit. I'm not sure, but we were in a meeting. One of the first meetings I've ever had in my life, like business-wise, strategy-wise, with Dave and Erica and Gaz. It was a pretty cool situation. And Barstow Indy, we started out as Barstow Indy. We thought it was too niche, right? Mm-hmm. Because I love Indianapolis. It's the reason why I'm staying there. It's the reason why I didn't move out to New York. I love Indianapolis. But we found out quickly that we're a voice not only just for a great city of Indianapolis and great state of Indiana. We're a voice for a lot of people across the Midwest and the heartland.
Sure.
That just people just love what happened in 1776. There were some sketchy years back then. Some people did some shady shit.
It was touch and go.
We don't have the best history of all time. No country does.
Right.
But we're proud to be from America. And that was just, it's kind of just all emulated from that. And ever since I can remember, I've been donning the red, white, and blue. I'm not tough enough to be in the military like you guys, but I just love America. Everywhere I go, I'm the stereotypical American. I mean, it's just what I am. I go to another country, they hate me. I can tell you quickly if that country loves or hates Americans because the way they treat me. It's just, I am the picture of America. I wear jean shorts everywhere. I have an American flag bandana hanging off my hip at all times, and I'm not scared of it. So we just figured that we should take that on. And kind of just promote it. We love the military. I got a military foundation. A lot of my friends are military folks. We like cops, not the dumbasses that are making poor decisions, but a majority of cops are good people. We just like hard work and good stuff, and that's basically everything we're about over there, Barstow America.
We're ZBT guys. We're big America guys too.
Yeah, big America guys.
We're trying to recruit you guys to our office. Hard. Yeah. I want to let you know that is happening behind closed doors without you guys even knowing. I'm trying to make a trade for you guys.
Chaps is going to be the harder move to make, considering he's got that whole family thing.
Yeah, my
it's crazy.
I think my wife would probably have Carmelo Anthony type veto powers over any trade.
I don't know what that means. I don't follow Knicks basketball, but does that mean your wife is just going to say absolutely?
All right. So in the Marine Corps, you have your service Charlie's uniform. For women, they'll wear the skirt, and it's called the alpha skirt. I definitely wear the alpha skirt in my family. Like
everybody has a lady.
Anybody that has a successful marriage lets your wife make the decision.
Yeah, happy wife, happy life. I mean, that's a cliche that's been since the beginning of time.
Yeah, and cliches become a thing for a reason.
Exactly. For a reason.
I'm not dumb. It's true. Like, my first marriage, terrible. Second one, knocking it out of the park. Just let my wife make all decisions.
Yeah. That's it takes a lot of pressure off you, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if something goes horrible.
Wrong, not on me.
happy life, I was told. Yeah.
Like I thought it was a great decision at the time, babe. I thought it was.
I'm almost wifed up, too.
Yeah.
And I've been terrible at relationships. I'm good at a lot of things. I'm very lucky that I'm good at a lot of things. Terrible at video games. Absolutely horrendous at video games. Bad at relationships in the past. This one, I'm learning the same thing. Kind of like let her just figure out what makes her happy and then kind of adjust around it. I'll go make the money. You just be happy. Let's have a good time. And that's kind of what we're doing. So I'll be wifed up soon. But we are trying to trade for you guys hard.
Well, I think you're right in line with the ZBT themes and mantras of life. So I think you're a good fit along with us. So
we'd be lucky to have you. I was like, you weren't on the podcast. Chaps just so happened to literally be in the office, and I was like, you want to come on with us? That's how it happened.
Yeah.
And it turned into, like,
a great episode.
One of the most amazing conversations I've ever had in my life, Chaps. I want to thank you so much for it.
Well, thank you. I feel like I have these – there's a level of drunkenness that I think that's perfect talking for me, where it's like –
comedians have that.
If I have, like, 2.5 drinks, I'm ready to go. And that's about where I was at yesterday.
4 to 5, not good though, right?
Yeah. Like, once I start getting more than that, like – And it's the time frame, too. Like, 2 or 3 drinks within, like, an hour and a half, and I'm going to still speak. You're not going to hear a lot of slurring, but my freedom of thought is just, like, so much better.
I mean, that's what drugs do, right? They dig into your brain that you don't normally use. I think that's kind of the thing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Right? And that's what alcohol does. And you started to slur a little bit there, but I thought your brain was working at a very high level, and we were very lucky for that. So I appreciate you having 2.5 margaritas right before talking to us.
Yeah.
I don't know if margaritas and beers are the same thing. I don't know what you're classifying as drinks. Just one margarita
beers
is equal.
For me, beers don't count as alcohol.
Oh, okay. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
That makes 100% sense.
Total sense.
Yeah, absolutely. That's
total sense.
A beer is not an alcoholic beverage.
Yeah.
Well, Pat, thanks so much for coming on, dude. We really appreciate it. Keep kicking ass, doing good things on your podcast. Thanks for your support.
Guys. Go America.
Go
Thank
America.
You so much for having me on. Thank you for your service. Cheers, guys.
Cheers. The next part of Zero Block 30 is going to be brought to you by our friends at Stamps.com. I hate going to the post office. Sometimes it's absolutely necessary. But if you just have a few things, go to Stamps.com. Stamps.com makes things like sending letters
If you want to be a handsome fellow like George H.W. Bush and send out personalized stationery, which I highly recommend, you can get that from Etsy. That was a free ad for Etsy. You can go get some personalized stationery and use stamps.com. Because with stamps.com, they give you a free scale. If you use the promo code zero, they give you a 4-week trial. It gets a digital scale, so you just have to drop it off. And it's so simple. You never have to go to the post office ever, ever again. You can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package using your own computer. And unlike the post office, stamps.com never closes. Because if you get out of work at 5 and the post office is closed at 5, that's extremely problematic.
Very problematic.
And if you want to do it in military terms, you get off at 1700 and the post office closes at 1700. Spoiler alert, that's the same exact time, but they're still fucking closed. So if you don't want to do that, go to stamps.com, use the promo code zero, and you'll get some free shit. All right, so now we have Jason Kander on the show. Here comes Jason Kander. Well, now on Zero Block 30 is a guest that I have been wanting to get basically since we started. A lot of you will remember him from a viral video that he had on YouTube during the election process. And during the election process was fucking ridiculous with some of the the ads that were coming out, and having one that I was like, I don't hate this one. Yeah. I don't hate this one.
Yeah, it was good.
Was like a pretty refreshing moment. So welcome to Zero Block 30, Jason Kander. Thank you, Jason, for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be with y'all.
So, Jason, how long did it take? How many practice sessions did you go through when you were putting the M16 together?
Well, so we got on the first take, but you know, they did a lot of takes.
Wow.
Well, but you know, the hard part was, look, I mean, it's not that, first of all, y'all have served, so you know that, like, what I did with my hands is muscle memory,
right?
Like, right. The hard part was, obviously, there's no teleprompter under the blindfold, like, so that's what I had to practice, is being able to do it that way. Also, you know, it's funny, We did it, but you know, when we all did it, like in the field, when you're cleaning your weapon and that kind of thing, like obviously you take the bolt apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So the funny thing for me is I did it and I was like, okay, I'm sure people, I'm sure this will get the point across about background checks. But I also knew that all of my military friends were going to be like, dude, you didn't take apart the bolt. And,
right.
And of course, that is exactly what has happened. But you know, 30 seconds is a pretty short period of time.
I wasn't going to mention the bolt thing, but that's why I told my wife, was like, did you see this? And I was like, man, take the bolt apart.
Yeah, exactly. There's for those who don't know, you know, in an AR-15, M4, M16, the bolt, there's a lot of little pieces that come apart, and it would have made that a much more difficult task, but still impressive nonetheless.
I mean, you could do it, but just it's finding it would take a lot. Like, if you're trying to do a 60-second, like, trying to find the firing pin.
Yeah. And also, like, I was, you know, people told me, they're like, yeah, the little pieces don't look that cool. And I was like,
yeah,
oh,
they don't.
No, that's right. So I said to Chaps, though, I asked him, I was like, do you think you could do that? And we both agreed, yeah, we probably could if we practiced, but we never thought to do that. So why did you even think, like, all right, I'm going to blindfold myself and put together this weapon?
So what happened was, the NRA gave me an F rating, and the other side was running a lot of ads about that and talking about that a lot. And I sort of, just in passing, said to my campaign team, I said, you know, I bet I can put a rifle together a lot faster than the other guy. And then they, you know, their creative mind started going, and they said, well, can you do it blindfolded? And I thought about it. I was like, well, I've done it in the dark a lot because, you know, we've all cleaned it out in the woods or whatever. And then it kind of went from there. And I just said, look, if we're going to do this, like, I want to make an argument for gun safety. I want to make an argument for background checks. And we'll do it in a way that says, like, and I know what I'm talking about. And that's really what the point of the ad was.
That's on our very first show, before Connor was even, like, a co-host, while he was just a guest, we talked about that we like – the idea of gun control, not because we don't like guns. A lot of people just freaking stink at using them. Like, they're just not good at it. So I don't want to be.
It's a tool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we know what it can do. And that gives us respect for that tool.
Right. And we know that if you're firing an M16 from one room, it could go through drywall. It's not going to stop. But there's a lot of people who don't know the capabilities of the weapon, so that's why I don't want a whole lot of people to have them.
No.
Well, like, I was watching a movie yesterday, I was watching a few days ago. It was The Accountant, War Dogs.
Right.
And I was watching this movie, and there's a part where one of the main characters, Bradley Cooper, puts a pistol in his face, and is telling him he's got 3 seconds and then he's going to shoot him, right? Well, I watch it and you guys would see this too, but most people wouldn't. There's his like other goon is standing right behind him. Right? Yeah. Like literally the dude, the guy he supposedly is going to shoot is got his head up against the midsection of his like buddy. And I'm sitting there going, well, this, it can go through.
Yeah.
Right. And so like the point you're making is the good one. Like when you know the capacity of a weapon, you know that, that it has to be handled responsibly.
Right. Well, and then that's the other part of it. A lot of people, all they know about weapons are what they see in movies.
Exactly.
And obviously Hollywood takes their liberties, so you're going to have a lot of misconceptions.
Right. And if you have to get a license to drive a car safely, that's the analogy that I make. No, it's not your constitutional right to drive a car, but if it's your land, you can drive a car around your farm at 12 years old if your parents say that that's okay. Like, if you want to keep your weapon on your farm or your house or wherever, I'm cool with that. But the moment that you step outside in public, you need to have some type of safety license to go along with it so that we know that you know how to use it correctly and safely.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the whole point of the ad really is just that, look, this is a pretty serious thing here, and having terrorists get a hold of them is really not a good idea. You know, I mean, and pretty basic stuff.
And really, everybody believes in gun control because nobody believes that every American citizen should have a GBU 43, which was dropped in Afghanistan just a few hours ago. And we would be remiss if we didn't get your thoughts on how not just this situation in Afghanistan, because obviously this is unfolding as we are talking. Like, there's going to be a lot more information, I'm sure, after we are done than when we began. But how do you think in the first 80-so days of President Trump's presidency, how do you think he's doing foreign policy-wise?
Well, I'm really worried about it because I think he's making it up as he goes along. And the reason that bothers me so much is, you know, it's funny. I just did a piece on CNN. I came straight to here from – I did a CNN interview about this. And what they were talking about in addition to the foreign policy stuff is then they started talking about, well – what's going to happen in the White House? Is it Bannon who's really got his ear, or is it, you know, Jared, what's his name, or what's the deal? And my point I made is the problem is that conversation relates way too closely for my comfort to the foreign policy conversation, because since he doesn't have any idea what he's doing and is just making it up as he goes, he's just doing whatever the last person he talked to said he should do. So, for instance, you know, he just said after meeting with President Xi in China, he's like, you know, this is a really smart guy. And now I realize that it's very complicated with North Korea. Well, so now I guess our China policy and our North Korea policy is going to be shaped around the fact that he spent 10 minutes talking to that guy. Well, that's like palace intrigue is much safer when it's like this little political sport for pundits to talk about the personalities. But when it equates to what decisions is the president of the United States going to make, who to attack, you know, where to levy sanctions, all this stuff, based on who does he currently like in the White House or outside the White House, that's really scary.
And I think that's fair. Like, we talked about a little bit how I thought it was kind of unfair. Just so you know, I'm more of a progressive liberal type of guy. I thought it was unfair that everybody brought up President Trump's tweets on Syria from 2013 and equated to now, because the situation was drastically different on the ground over years, like what we've been doing, all that played a part.
I think that's probably fair. I agree with you.
But with the president of China situation, if he was a currency manipulator, what changed in a week? Like those kind of things are where you don't have that type of leeway, because I think his stance on China, he knows about economics. His stance on China shouldn't have changed as quickly as as it did.
The other piece to this from the military perspective is I've been really bothered by – so like within the last hour, I don't know when this runs, but within the last hour, they finally asked Trump. Like, they first asked Spicer, like, did Trump authorize dropping the Moab? And Spicer wouldn't answer. Mm-hmm. Then they asked Trump, and Trump's answer was and then he says everybody knows exactly what was going on. First of all, that's the opposite of true.
That's not an answer.
Yeah, that's not an answer, nor do we actually know. Otherwise, we wouldn't have asked the question.
Right. And unfortunately, we're getting used to getting a complete non-answer or a lie from the president. But what bothers me about that is very much in line with what he's been doing with trying to push as much decision-making authority with regard to raids in places like Yemen down the chain as he can, because he's saying it's for speed, it's for streamlining. I'm sorry, even if you don't take any time to do, you know, intelligence preparation of the battlefield, which you should do, but even if you were to accept this premise that they need to do less of that, you still, even with limited information, in a decision like dropping something like that, or a decision, and which we don't know yet whether it was a good decision or bad decision, I'm reserving judgment.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But in a decision of that magnitude, or of the magnitude of the SEAL raid that was done in Yemen, it is not unreasonable to expect the commander-in-chief to say, that was my call. Right or wrong, that was my call. And what bothers me about it is, I think what he's doing is he is trying to put that on the military as much as possible, so then when it goes well, he'll take credit. When it goes poorly, he'll blame them. That's why after Ryan Owens was killed, he said the generals lost Owens.
Yeah. Right.
Like, that's not how you lead anything.
Right. We talked about that pretty ad nauseum. That was a pretty gross thing to do. Another concern that we've talked about is, I'm a huge Mattis guy, just being a Marine. I loved General Mattis. I loved what he meant to the Marine Corps, his legacy in the Marine Corps. But Secretary Mattis and General Mattis are very different. And we talked about how that there was concerns with him not having 5 years away from the Department of Defense before he stepped in as SecDef. And I think if he is the one leading these things, you could easily see that maybe he's making a decision to drop the biggest bomb that we've dropped in a long time, because he knows what it's like to be a general on the ground, and he wants to basically another version of shock and awe. Like, things are going to change.
I think so. Without, like, I don't feel like I've fully formed an opinion on Mattis at this point, but what I do think, what bothers me about this is, I feel like when people talk about civilian control of the military, usually people talk about it in this context of, it's how you avoid a coup, and that's all, I guess, also accurate. But the thing that we forget is that the reason that we have the president in charge of the military, among many reasons, is because that is a single elected individual accountable to the American people, who the American people can then hold accountable for that decision. So now, look, I'm not saying the president should micromanage every decision on the battlefield by any stretch. But big decisions like this, I absolutely think that it should be the president, because, okay, so they dropped it in Nangarhar province, right? Mm-hmm. And what all they're really saying so far is, look, Nangarhar province, it's very remote. So, you know, and that's true. There are definitely big parts of Nangarhar province that are remote. I don't know if y'all have been there. Very possibly.
No, just Iraq.
Okay, so I did a mission to Nangarhar. I was there for a couple of days. I was in Jalalabad. There's a lot of people in Jalalabad, and it's in Nangarhar. So my point is, we don't know. Maybe this went great. Maybe it was exactly the right move. I don't know. We'll hopefully find out enough information. But whatever it was, I think it's really important that a decision of that magnitude, there should be a single individual like the president that the American people can hold accountable for it. Even if General Mattis, now Secretary Mattis, even if he is the perfect guy for the job, that's the whole idea of the commander-in-chief being the elected president.
Were you ever a company commander or anything like that?
No, I never got a company command. I briefly had a platoon before I went over in like a Op 4 training unit. And then after I came back from being an intel on the ground guy over there, I actually was an instructor in OCS.
So you were the Secretary of State of Missouri, though, so we can use that as an example. Anything that came out of...
obviously made decisions in the military.
Right, and anything that came out of your office as the Secretary of State for your state, I'm sure that everything came out, you wanted it to be, like, in your voice, your tone, like, you set the message from that office.
Well, yeah, the leader sets the culture and the direction. And, you know, when I was in charge of 40 officer candidates at a time, you know, I'm in charge of them. I'm responsible for them. When I had a team of intelligence soldiers that I was working with overseas, like when we would go on a mission and there would be a few of us there, like, you know, I was the LT. I was responsible. I mean, I knew that if something bad happened and I made it through it, that I'd be the one writing to their parents or calling their parents. Like, so yeah, absolutely. Like, folks who have done what we have done, I think maybe sometimes it's arrogant, I don't know, but I feel like we think about leadership and what it means more than folks who have not been in our line of work. Because to us, it's like, it's sacred, you know, not to use hyperbole.
But you're absolutely right. Cause I think we think about it in terms of, not to be morbid, but we think about it in terms of life and death.
Right.
And speaking now with you, and you made a comment earlier about how you reserve the right to judge whether or not this was a good thing or a bad thing. And I agree with you. I don't know yet if it's good or bad, but it's almost like Trump, his response is he's waiting too, because he wants to know if he's going to take that responsibility or not. Because when you consider this level of munition, the amount of money it cost to drop that level, he knew that this was happening.
I sure hope so.
If he didn't, that's a bigger issue.
That's a bigger issue altogether.
Like, to have like sub nuclear power like going off, like, come on, man.
Can you imagine, like, if you were overseas and you know, your battalion commander comes in and is like, hey, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna go do this, and you're like, was that your decision, sir? And he's like, you know, whatever. Like, you would think one of two things. You would either think like, he disagrees with the decision, it came from above him, or you would think like it is his decision and doesn't want to own it. Either way, it would not inspire a lot of confidence on your part.
And I think that's what we're getting after the Syria strike. We had Secretary Tillerson, we had Ambassador Haley, we had Mattis, that were all speaking in different ways about the same exact thing. They were talking about Syria. Tillerson was saying, maybe we should remove them. We'll have a little bit of reserve judgment about that. It's possible that we need to. Haley's saying before the UN, absolutely unequivocally, he needs to go. Mattis is kind of saying that we're going to monitor it and we're going to do basically what we're told type situation. That's not good. You need to have an established frame of thought from the executive branch. And yes, they are very much different independent speakers, but you almost had them acting as senators, where they, yes, they're a part of that party, but they're not speaking on behalf of the president, where in past, that's not the way it happens. It should flow from the commander-in-chief, from the president's office, down to his tentacles. Do you agree with that?
Totally. You know, look, what it makes me think of is, you remember the part of the op order, the commander's intent?
Yes.
Right? Like, commander's intent was there so that you could, if it was a
situation, might be the most important part of the op order.
Exactly, because that part is the part where if you're confronted with something where you weren't given a very specific instruction of exactly what to do and you have to make a decision, you're able to recall the commander's intent and say, well, what decision would I make right now that is consistent with what the boss is wanting out of this whole thing? And I feel like the problem here is that President Trump is providing no commander's intent. His commander's intent is that he be able to move freely from anything that's unpopular without getting hurt by it. And as a result, you have the ambassador to the United Nations, the Secretary of State, other people going on television and trying to persuade him, rather, because that's how he is ultimately going to make a decision if he makes one. And I don't care, you know, whether you agree or disagree with, no matter who the president is, agree or disagree with him, that doesn't create stable leadership for the military or for the international community, because that's one of the things America does. Like, when America is strong and able to provide a good, stable presence, that makes the world a safer place, particularly for Americans. And I just don't think he's doing that.
As an attorney, do you think the strike on Syria was a violation of law? Do you think it was an act of war?
You know, that's not the kind of law I did. So I would be, I'm not sure. I don't think I'm the best person to talk about from that perspective. Here's what I can say about that I think is sort of in the same comfortably, which is there's a reason that President Obama wanted, and other people on both sides of the aisle want, a modification, an updating to the authorization for use of military force. Because whether ultimately it is a violation of law or not, what I think tactically or strategically around the world, what I think matters a lot is that when we have an AUMF that is built around a strategy that was pre-ISIS, right, then you're not saying to the world or to Americans, here's exactly who we as a country believe is our enemy, and that's your commander's intent, right? So like, I feel like there's several steps here that are a problem. One, as we just talked about, the administration is not on the same page. They need to get on the same page. Mm-hmm. Then they need to go and get a new, an updated AUMF, get the country, Congress and the president, on the same page. Then we can get the international community on the same page. But until then, we are treating strikes, which are tactics, as if they're strategy, and moving from one point to the next based on who the president talked to last. And that's not going to work. no matter who's president.
And it's just volatile because it's a guessing game in a lot of ways. For the international community, they're like, well, we don't really know what's going to happen next, what the U.S. is going to do next. So it's a little scary in that regard.
It's hard to get your allies to go along with you.
Exactly.
Do you feel like – I feel like this strike that happened today could go one of two ways. I feel like it's very difficult to stand before the world, essentially, especially in the U.N. with Nikki Haley, and saying that what happened in Syria was an atrocity, that this type of thing could never happen to civilians, and then drop the largest bomb probably since Vietnam. I feel like that's going to be a huge point of contention. It's very hard to establish a moral high ground when you're doing things like that. Would you agree?
It's why I really, really hope that they got it right. You know, I really hope that when they say this was done exactly the right way, minimize civilian casualties, very remote area, just, you know, this network of caves with ISIS fighters. I really hope that's I really hope that's right. One, because morally, that's the right thing to do.
Right.
And it's what I want from my country. And two, because it will have a big effect on the rest of the world. And it's why, like, all his bluster about when he comes in and starts talking about rules of engagement and all this stuff. I mean, I hope that one of the lessons he's taking from a lot of what's been going on lately and all this changing of his mind that he's doing, I hope that it's him recognizing that he needs to understand stuff before he talks. I really hope he's learning that lesson for all of us.
I agree. Let's transition into kind of what you're doing now outside of that. You have an organization. Tell us a little bit about your organization, because I know you're very passionate that everybody who is able to vote is able to vote.
Yeah, exactly. So after the election, I was watching what was going on, and one of the things that happened was, as I'm sure everybody remembers, is that President-elect Trump told one of the biggest lies that a president's ever told, maybe the biggest lie, I don't know, which is that 3 to 5 million illegal voters voted in the election. And everybody looked at it, and most people looked at it and understandably said, okay, well, here's a deeply insecure person who just lost the popular vote by 3 million votes, and so he's made up this lie. And there's probably a lot of truth to that. I mean, obviously, he did make up the lie. That's probably a big part of his motivation. But I saw something scarier than that in a lot of ways, which is, so I, you know, the last 4 years until recently, I was the Secretary of State of Missouri. So I was the chief election official in Missouri. And we had a supermajority Republican legislature who was constantly trying to pass voter suppression policy, stuff that makes it a lot harder for folks to vote, certain folks to vote. And when I saw the president-elect do that, and then I saw Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell respond with anything other than, well, that's a lie, right? Instead, they were like, well, you know, we're not sure about that. That was part of a Republican effort that has been going on for a while, about 15 years, to try and make Americans believe that there is widespread fraud so that they can pass these laws that make it really hard for a lot of folks to vote. And I feel like what he's doing is about his reelection strategy. It's about disenfranchising Americans. And I don't like that. And
let's get a little more specific. Yeah. Like, what kind of folks are you speaking of?
Sure. So a lot of the time, voter suppression laws are things like laws that require a very specific form of photo identification, not just any, but like a very specific form in order to vote. Laws that scale back on early voting opportunities in certain neighborhoods, right? To speak really candidly, what they are is the Republican Party knows that disabled folks, low-income folks, minorities, women, you know, folks like this, who women sometimes are disproportionately affected because, like, if they've remarried and their name has changed, these folks are really, they have a habit of not voting Republican very often. And so the Republican Party says, well, we're trying to crack down on fraud. Fraud's this problem. You, as an American, are more likely to be struck by lightning than you are to commit voter impersonation fraud. That's fact, right?
Yeah.
And so the problem they're trying to solve is these folks that are heavily affected by these laws. It makes it a lot harder for them to vote. You know, the problem they're trying to solve is if they can keep those folks from voting, well, then they've solved the problem of those people showing up. Now, never mind the fact that they could think about trying to incorporate what's best for those communities into their beliefs. Like, they don't want to try that. They just want to make it harder for these folks to vote. I'm not cool with that at all.
Nor should you be. Yeah. I don't think anybody else should. I think everybody that has the requirements to vote should be able to do it. I want to get into a little bit of silliness. We've talked about some pretty heavy topics.
Okay, sure.
I mean, we don't always have to talk about big bombs. So you said you spent some time at Officer Candidate School. What are some more ridiculous things that you saw there?
Oh, man.
Because people always think – I'll let you think for a second, so yeah. I'll talk for a minute so you can think. Sure. So people always think of officers as these real gentleman guys, like that's that's all they are. But lest you forget, the only difference between a young lance corporal and a second lieutenant is one is a little bit shiny and the other one's flat black. They're both equally stupid a majority of the time.
The lance corporal's been promoted.
Right, twice.
That's a good point.
It was – gosh, I saw a lot of interesting stuff. I mean, and the funny thing is like, you just like, I did it for about 3.5 years. And what's funny is you see the same mistakes over and over again, and then after a little while you realize like, oh man, I really got to act like I've never seen this before. Like
right.
that, like, and, you know, and for me it was interesting because like when I described to my friends, like what that job was. I mean, I wore the black hat, and I our job was to create, I believe the manual said, a stressful and demanding environment, which basically meant we needed a whole lot of physical training correction. We needed to yell a lot. And so my friends who understand that that's what I did, like there's a video or two of that, and they're just like, they can't believe that's me, right? But like that was the job. And so, you know, one time, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that comes to mind. I don't want to embarrass any actual officer candidates. So I'll just tell you a funny thing that happened that, like, was a reminder for me that even though, like, I was in this job and I was kind of, for lack of, I always used to joke, creating officers in my own image, that, like, there were times when even they would step up and be like, sir, and I'd go, oh, crap, right? So, like, one time the platoon had really, we were at Accelerated Officer Candidate School in Alabama down at Fort McClellan, and the platoon had really been messed up. And so we, you know, all the TAC officers got together and they're like, they need to get smoked. And so everybody agreed. And it was kind of looking back on it, it was like all his TACs were coming out of there like Notre Dame coming out of the locker room. Like, and these poor officer candidates, they knew they had messed up, mm-hmm. and they see us coming out and we're clearly fired up. And these poor kids are just like, oh my God.
So for those people that are listening that aren't military folks, smoke means like you are about to get fucked up. Like they are going to run you to death. You're going to do push-ups to death, pull-ups to death. You're going to low crawl, do everything. You are, when you come back for your PT shower, you are going to be physically and mentally exhausted. It's going to be a long, long day for you.
And the whole idea is that you do it for a measurable purpose, right? Like they made a mistake. You know, you're not going to do it past the point of them not knowing, or, you know, past the point of them not getting a learning point out of it. So anyway, so we're doing that and we're going about this work and they're doing a lot of side straddle hops, et cetera, et cetera. And they're all sweating a lot. And then every once in a while, we'll be like, all right, stop, drink water. And so we did that long enough that one of these OCs, officer candidates, who I have to give credit, like this took courage, stops me and he's like, hey, sir. And he was keeping track of it on like his hydration card. And he's like, this is how much water we've drank in the last hour. And like, you know, thank God that kid had the courage to speak up because, I mean, I think it probably would have been okay. But, you know, overhydration is an issue. Mm-hmm. So my point is like, it was like a learning point for me that we had taught these kids enough and done it well enough that this kid stepped up and was like, I'm even going to step up and do what I think my job, which is telling the boss who's yelling at me. And I was like, I stopped everybody. I was like, stop drinking water. And I pulled this OC up front and I was like, hey. This kid did it exactly right.
See,
you know?
Jason, I got to stop you, man. Like, you just pulled the ultimate interview. What's my biggest weakness? I care too much. Like, I asked you to tell some embarrassing stories, and you're trying to make these people love these second lieutenants.
Oh, okay. Here, you want a bad second lieutenant story? I got those.
Oh, yeah. Let's go.
All right. Let's see. A bad second lieutenant story. All right. I'm not going to say where, but we had this guy who was one of the TACs in Officer Candidate School. And he was like, he thought that his job was just to be mean. Like he didn't understand that it was his job to actually like, you know, train these kids.
Mentor.
And so he would run around, doing what he'd seen in the movies, right? Being like yelling, I want your DOR, your drop on request. Like he wanted to force these people out. And it was just, I remember, you know how sometimes you, in any job, especially in the military, like you have a lot of people you really respect. And then sometimes you learn the most from the people who you thought just were awful at it.
Yeah.
You know, and like, And I remember we had so I was ROTC, actually. I was not OCS, but I was an OCS TAC. And I had done this silly thing where I had this empty box, and I'd given it to the platoon. And I told them it was full of Hua. I was like, this is the box of Hua. And so they were, you know, they would come to attention in formation, and they'd go, and the guy in charge, like the whoever was platoon sergeant at the time, would go, "Present the box," and they'd hold it up and they'd go, "Hua." It was hilarious. Well, anyway, this guy, who I don't know if he, like, it was about his manhood or what, but he would just constantly berate me and just be like, "Man, that's some ROTC stuff." That's like, this guy, like, really thought that our job was just to destroy the morale of these kids. And you know, it's not everybody is great at what they do. And it was like, and I remember just all the rest of us having to constantly manage for this guy, and like unfortunately having to undermine the guy with OCs. But the truth is, like, they knew. I mean, you know, enlisted troops, you know, they know when an officer's jacked up. Like, we didn't have to say anything. They were like, it got to a point where they were almost ignoring the guy.
And yeah, we see that all the time. Like, if you're, I call it majoring in minors. Like, if you always major in minor and everything is such a big deal, nothing is a big deal at all. And we see that in the political process a lot, where if you're offended about everything, you're not offended about fucking nothing.
Yeah.
Like, you're just not. Like, you can't be constantly offended or blown away by every single thing that happens, because then when something huge happens, like you drop a huge GBU 43, or you make a strike against Syria, or there's sarin gas that goes off, those are the times that you need to save your outrage. Like, these are big deals.
Yeah, no, so, I agree. Go
another
ahead.
Story, I guess, is you remember in Black Hawk Down, the Sergeant Eversman?
Yeah, we had him on the show.
Yeah. He was on our show.
You did?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, great
awesome.
Guy.
All right. Well, I met him once when I was in. I mean, it's a good example of, like, people who have been there and done that don't overreact to everything. And when I was in ROTC, I remember we were out doing land nav. We were out doing an FTX, and I was doing land navigation. And it was one of those nights where I was relatively new still, and, like, it rained on my map, and I didn't know how to, like, so, like, it fell apart, and I was out in the woods, just, you know, you're just wet and cold. And
miserable.
Like,
Very miserable.
And like, I got none of my points on land nav because my map basically fell apart. It was, like, it was pathetic and embarrassing, right? I was still pretty new to all of it. And I'm, you know, so at the end of the night, I'm coming in, and at that point, he was then, I think, Master Sergeant Eversman, and he happened to be one of the ROTC instructors for, like, another school in the area. So he was out there. Of course, you know, everybody was like, "Oh my God, it's Master Sergeant Eversman." You know, it was like, he walked on water. And
just the most humble dude ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I hadn't interacted with him hardly at all, right? And so then I'm coming in to the tent where you're going to turn in your points and stuff, and I got my head, like, hanging, and I come up, and he's like, "Hey, cadet, how'd you do?" And I was like, "Well, Sergeant, I didn't get any, and I didn't get any points." And he goes, "Well, you got your weapon?" And I was like, "Yes, Sergeant." And he goes, "Success. Get in here and get some coffee. It's cold out." You know? And I was like, and I remember, I always remembered that. I was like, that dude was basically saying, like, "Look, you know who I am, and I'm telling you it's fine. Like, you'll
right.
get, like, you know,
you'll figure it out."
Whereas somebody exactly. who's not as accomplished as Master Sergeant Eversman would probably be like, "Oh, you should do it because I do it perfectly every time." I feel like once you've accomplished a little bit, you understand the struggle because you remember when you were a young idiot too. Mm-hmm. Like you were standing out there with your map wet and you couldn't do it. But I'm sure you eventually figured it out, and they know that as well.
You don't got to train a soldier how to be miserable because they already know.
Right.
And I mean, to Chaps's point about having these experiences and the perspective, do you feel that you benefited from being in the military and it makes you better as a politician because you have that background? And do you think we would benefit as a country if more folks in Washington and elected officials across the country had some sort of service, whether it's military or public service?
Definitely. I the fact that I served, whether, you know, I deployed, but even if I hadn't, just the training and just, you know, being put in situations where you got to make decisions like that, it has made me not just better in what I do now, but, like, honestly, it makes me a better dad. It makes me a better husband. I think it's made me a better person. And I definitely think that one of the problems that we have in our politics right now is that a really, really large percent, and you don't have to be a veteran to have this be, to overcome this problem, right? There are good people who this doesn't apply to because they've been through something. But when you have an awful lot of people in our politics who the hardest thing they've ever done in their life is run for office, well, then they are going to look at every single thing and think it's the biggest deal in the world. Right. And they're going to, I mean, and here, I always tell, like, when I talk to high school audiences or college audiences, I always say one of the big secrets to adulthood is that adults will run around and tell you that, like, all these decisions are really hard. Mm-hmm. And the truth is that 99% of the decisions you make as an adult, actually, you know the right thing to do.
Right.
And when you make it hard, it's usually because you're deciding whether to do the right thing.
Sure.
Politics is exactly the same. And I think what my experience in the military has given me that has helped me in politics is I recognize that most of the decisions you make in politics, like, you know the right thing to do. So just do the right thing. And, you know, if it doesn't work out for you personally, politically, like, it's not that big of a deal. Like, you're going to be okay. And that's been helpful to me.
No doubt about it. Well, Jason, man, I'm pretty sure you feel the same way. I don't really care what side of the aisle people are on politics-wise. My concern is that you're trying to do good. So whether or not you're a Democrat or Republican, it doesn't really matter to me as long as I know that your intentions are in the right place. And that's what I liked about you from the get-go. It seems like that you really actually care about people and care about policy to make people's lives better. We just so happen to be on the same side of the political aisle. But I appreciate you, and I appreciate you coming on the show and taking time.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, and I mean, I'd say, I guess, if I had to pick a side, I'm probably on the other side of the aisle, but I've liked everything. And I've done my research and followed you for a little while now, and I respect it, a lot of what you do, for the same reason that Chaps does. So as long as you're just doing good things, man, whether you're Democrat, Republican, in the middle, it doesn't matter. I think do good things, and we'll keep moving forward and be better as a country.
So make sure you follow Jason at Jason Kander on Twitter. Were you on Instagram?
I think I am, but I kind of got to get that figured out.
All right, and that's Jason.
So find me there.
Yeah, so it's Jason, regular spell, and then K-A-N-D-E-R. That's Kilo Alpha November Delta Echo Romeo for those still wanting a little military phonetic alphabet. Thanks, Jason. Cool. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Huge shout out to Jason for coming on. I know it's usually – he probably doesn't hear people cuss a lot in his interviews.
He's on CNN. CNN and stuff, yeah.
So, like, I think his face looked kind of shocked when I was dropping fuck bombs. But I can't help it, like, at this point. Like, yeah. I just can't.
But he was comfortable with us.
He was. Like, you could tell that he's just a really down-to-earth dude, and it's probably refreshing.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't going to say anything, but I'm more attractive than Anderson Cooper.
That was ridiculous. That was a lie.
Anderson Cooper is really sexy.
He is, man. That Silver Fox is one.
Yeah, dude.
He's one handsome.
My hair's starting to go gray on the side, and my family has, like, mad silver hair all the way through.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that's what happens. But before we end the show, because this was a longer show, but before we end, we have a badass of the week who lost his life. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Cons?
Yeah, so we talked about Jason with dropping a bomb in Afghanistan, and just recently we lost a Special Forces soldier in Afghanistan. Staff Sergeant Mark D. Allen Carr was killed of injuries in a small arms fire attack when he was conducting a counter-ISIS operations in the Nangarhar province. He was the weapons sergeant with 1st Battalion, 7th Special Forces Group. He is an Edgewood, Maryland native. Father was an Army veteran as well. He enlisted in 2009 and graduated from the Q course in 2016. His awards include the Purple Heart, 5 Army Commendation Medals, which is impressive, 6 Army Achievement Medals, Iraq Campaign Medal with 2 stars, Combat Infantry Badge, Expert Infantryman Badge, Special Forces Tab, Ranger Tab, Parachutist Badge, and Air Assault Badge. So this guy was certainly a badass, paid the ultimate sacrifice, for which we will be forever grateful. So thank you to him for making that sacrifice this past week.
No doubt about it. And huge shout out to the Air Force. Even if you, no matter where you end up siding politically on if the bomb that we dropped was good or bad, the Air Force Bubbas did their job, man.
Yep.
Like, and they are dedicated service members. They often don't get the credit that they deserve, not only just in the national media, but even on this show. So huge shout out to the Air Force Bubbas out there that are doing their thing. We have one more ad. Two more ads, actually. BearMattress.com, Zero Block 30 Bear Mattress. My wife, when I got to New York, she was like, hey, we need to get another Bear Mattress because I have the pillow. I have the Bear Mattress pillow. The pillow will literally make your dick sing.
Like, it's so good.
It'll lure you into getting that mattress.
She was like, I didn't wake up hot at all. I didn't have to even fold it over in the middle of the night. Like, there, you can sleep on your back, you can sleep on your stomach, you can sleep on your side, and it's all perfect with the BareMattress.com pillow especially. But if you want to go to the mattress, I don't have a mattress, but if the pillow's that good, if the pillow makes my wife so happy that she texts me that she needs another one, then I can't even imagine what the mattress would be like. If you want to get $50 off and try it out and tweet me about the sex that you have on it, how it bounces back, you can do that. ZBT50 to take $50 off your new mattress. It's eco-friendly. People are always like, hey, chaps, is the mattress eco-friendly? I'm here to tell you, it is, my friend. Buying a mattress in a store can cost thousands of dollars. KFC and I talked about it on Podfathers Today that mattress salesmen are probably worse than used to car salesmen because they probably picture you doing it whenever they're talking to you. You don't want to do that. If you need a new mattress, go to BareMattress.com, use the promo code ZBT50, and you can get a good deal. You're going to get a 100-night trial. So if you're a married guy, you get a 100-night trial. You're going to have sex on that thing at least 11 times. Maybe. No, not at least. Probably at least four. So that's one in every 25 nights.
Yeah, that's better than nothing.
That's pretty good. I mean, that's better than a lot of people's odds. I feel like that's pretty good.
Especially
if you don't
guys.
Like it. If you're a weirdo and you don't like it, you can send that fucker back and they'll 100% refund your money. That's right. 100 nights, absolutely risk-free. We're going to do a surprise quick one.
Okay.
ZBT Theater.
All right. Well, please tell me why it's problematic. And presumably we're talking about the time when Forrest was in the Army and served in Vietnam.
Yes. It's problematic, one, because why was it Forrest an officer?
Yeah.
He graduated from Alabama.
Yeah, he had a college degree. Well, I don't know why he enlisted.
His recruiter fucked him.
Big time.
He could have gone out from Alabama, and these people, they picked him up in Alabama. He's an All-American football player. And you're telling me the fuckers on the bus aren't trying to sit by Forrest?
Yeah.
You have an All-American player in Alabama. Everybody knows who he is.
Yeah, that's true.
So he's not getting the treatment now, when he was at Greenbow, and he was going to school, he was definitely getting the treatment, and Jenny was nice to him. Shout out to Jenny for being nice to him. He was probably getting it as a young kid with braces on his legs.
Shout out to Jenny for, you know, really supporting the troops. One, when he was undergrad, and then two, right before he went to Vietnam, she gave him that great advice that ultimately saved his life. So shout out to Jenny supporting the troops.
I do love whenever he's sitting there cleaning his weapon.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an all-time movie line for me. Why did you put that weapon together so quickly, Gum? Because you told me to, Drill Sergeant. It's like the perfect answer.
Yeah, maybe that's why I think he was better as a soldier, because he was great at taking orders.
Oh, he would have been a shitty officer, but he should have been one.
Yeah.
He would have been a shitty officer.
But he was one hell of a soldier, I will say that. You know, he just kept on fighting. Never complained either, which is surprising for an infantryman. Didn't complain when it was raining for however long it was raining.
Either did Bubba. He just wanted to lean up against it so his head wouldn't be in the mud.
Yeah, with the sideways rain, big old fat rain.
Yeah.
So.
And I posted a picture on our Instagram and on Twitter. So follow that, ZB30, zero blog 30, the number, on both Instagram and Twitter, of a young Marine's heels.
Oof.
And that's why Lieutenant Dan
told
him, take care of your feet. Because you are fucked if you let your feet get that. And for those that are watching and listening, nobody's watching, but anybody who's listening, you have those things with your feet because you wear dress socks and they got wet and you didn't change them. That's the only reason why. Because then when dress socks become wet, little fun fact for you, little science talk, when dress socks become wet, they basically become sandpaper on your feet. They will fuck your ass up.
Yep.
So it's a young, dumb Marine who didn't do his laundry. I know this is it because I've seen it so many times. This
tale
is
exactly
what
happened.
He didn't do his laundry. He knew that if he had any other color socks, that a guy like me would be like, why in the fuck are you wearing those socks?
Yeah.
So he had black socks because nobody's going to pay attention that closely. He didn't want to say he needed to borrow somebody else's socks. So instead, he ends up in medical with no skin left on
his feet. I mean, that picture was probably worse than anything I've ever seen. I've had blisters on my feet. I've seen people with blisters. Nothing to that extent, though. Because as soon as you start feeling hot spots, you do something to combat that. You change your socks. You maybe put some tape or some moleskin on your feet. You do something. You don't let it get to that point. So that was, as you like to say, that was problematic.
Oh, definitely was. And before we end, I have one more thing that I want to tell. A little spoiler for next week.
Ooh.
A little spoiler
for next week.
I have a couple save rounds alibis as well.
And I am going, you go first. I want to close it out.
Okay, great. That works. Real quick, couple. Shout out to the men's and women's boxing team at West Point. Both won the national championship in this last week. Really proud of them. Keeping up the winning tradition of the boxing team at West Point. The tickets are now live for the Operation Heal Our Heroes Freedom Cruise in Boston. We got a lot of guys, a lot of Barstool guys going to be coming to the event. We got some local athletes in the area. Our boy Joe Cardona is going to be there amongst some other guys. It's going to be a great event. Go get your tickets soon before they sell out. And then lastly, you know, we come on here every week and people hear our voices, but they don't necessarily know about the people who are behind the scenes, the lower enlisted guys doing the grunt work. So I just wanted to give a shout out to Chuck and to Reed, who do all the grunt work for us and bring you guys these episodes each week, work on our social media, and do their best to make us look and sound our best each week. So shout out to Chuck and Reed.
Yeah, follow Charlie at Charlie Wisco on Twitter and follow Reed at Reed Grubbs on Twitter. So this is the part that I want to talk about. Listen to this. I'm going to take a risk and read here.
Best of luck, dude.
I know.
Do your best.
And there's some big fucking words going on in
here. Shit.
So I'm very nervous. For conspicuous gallantry and intrepid at the risk of his own life above and beyond the call of duty while serving as an automatic rifleman with Company F, 2nd Battalion, 9th Marines, Regimental Combat Team 1, 1st Marine Division Forward, 1st Marine Expeditionary Force, in Helmand Province, Afghanistan, in support of Operation Enduring Freedom on 21 November 2010. Lance Corporal Kyle Carpenter was a member of a platoon-sized coalition force comprised of two reinforced Marine rifle squads partnered with an Afghanistan National Army squad. The platoon had established patrol base Dakota 2 days earlier in a small village in the Maha district in order to disrupt the enemy activity and provide security for the local Afghan population. Lance Corporal Carpenter and fellow Marines were manning a rooftop security position on the perimeter of the patrol base when the enemy initiated a daylight attack with hand grenades, one of which landed inside the sandbag position. Without hesitation and with complete disregard for his own his safety, Lance Corporal Carpenter moved toward the grenade in an attempt to shield his fellow Marines from the deadly blast. When the grenade detonated, his body absorbed the brunt of the blast, severely wounding him, but saving his life of a fellow Marine. By his undaunting courage, bold fighting spirit, and unwavering devotion to duty in the face of almost certain death, Lance Corporal Carpenter reflected great credit on himself and upheld the highest traditions of the Marine Corps and the United States Naval Service. Signed, President Obama. Kyle Carpenter will be on Zero Blog 30 next week. Sound the retreat.